Expobomb, and we're here to make you think about death and get sad and stuff!
Voices, animal voices, the tremor of cold, the feminine abyss, and I'm reaching my threshold, staring at the truth till I'm blind.
Well, hip hop and Slinky Stop, we are on another amazing episode of After Rod. Actually, specifically, episode number 468. And tonight, we have a guest by the name of Jet Eller, who is a writer, director, and a fun man full of other surprises. Hey, Jet, how's it going?
Well, it's going pretty good, Zach. Hope you're doing well.
Oh, I'm always amazing, and people always ask me why I say that, because, like, who wants to talk to a grumpy guy?
Yeah, that's true. Huh? You'd be surprised. There's somebody out there.
Oh, no. They talk to the grumpy guy because the options are limited.
Yeah.
The option of the grumpy guy and the friendly guy, 70 to 80% always go straight to the friendly guy and only go to the grumpy guy when they have to.
Yep, but you're right about that.
So it's all about the marketing. I do a little bit of sales, so I get that one. So tell us a little bit about this lovely little movie, Night Feeders. By the way, I watched it, and I giggled a few times. I thought it was fun.
Well, we shot that in 2003, I think it was. And we didn't have a whole lot of money, so we had to... everybody wore a few hats, you know. I think we spent $58,000. That included our insurances and stuff. So nobody made very much money, but the film actually did pretty good. When we took it to the Berlin Film Festival, and it was sold there to a London distributor, and which is a really odd story, because our agent is in Los Angeles, and they went all the way to the Berlin Film Festival to sell the film, and they sold it to this London company whose office was almost in the same building that they were in Los Angeles. Literally, they could have just walked across the hall. But they got a paid vacation out of it, so I guess they were happy. But,
The Hollywood methodology is everybody else pays for everything and nobody makes... Oh, wait, just the companies don't make anything.
Yeah, somebody made a lot. We did our own box design, and it was we loved it. It had parts of the story in it, and plus it was the monster that we had, and they didn't like it, so they did their own box and charged us about $40,000, I believe it was, to redo the box.
And those bastards.
Yeah.
And the monster, by the way, it's okay to swear on this show.
Yeah, their monster wasn't even in the movie. It's what really, but you know, that's the way of the distributor. Once you sign that piece of paper, you got to go their route, you know. And A lot of filmmakers learn that the hard way.
And I agree with you, because we talked about this on Messenger the other day, that the design that you guys did looks better than what they went, because I've seen the two of them now, one on IMDb and one with the image you shared. The IMDb image, the one that you're saying that the producer went with, looks more like a Gorn from Star Trek.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Nowhere in the film do we show any teeth, you know?
Yeah.
I'm a little insulted about it, but, you know, that kind of went away when I went to the Blockbuster store and I saw the film sitting on the shelf, you know. That, I thought, well, you know, that's a... And plus, my dream came true. I always wished to make a movie and have it talked about in the Fangoria magazine, and I got my wish, you know.
Excellent. So what issue of Fangoria was it in?
Sorry,
way back then?
Yeah, 2006. It'd be 2006.
Okay.
And I think it was like every 3 months then. So there's four there. But I think it even mentions it on the front cover, you know, in the corner down there. If I'm not mistaken, I'm not real sure. You would think I would be sure about that, but I'm...
We're talking almost 20 years ago. It's like, where do you see where to go, and how does whatever it's going to do?
Yeah, and plus that, you know, that there's this, oh, we just made a movie and we sold it, you know. But after all the work, you know, you feel like, well, you know, I guess we earned that, you know, because it was a lot of work. And we, I ain't going to say we got screwed over. I will say that we didn't make what I don't think what we should have, but I'm perfectly happy with what we come up with and the way it worked out, because we could have had nothing, you know, just as easily. And I'd much rather have what we had. At least the film did get out there, you know. People did get to see it. It was on YouTube for free for about 12 years, I think, 12 years. And it got pirated, and I think it was a Portuguese language. It was Brazil is what was had pirated it, but their version was really good. I was really impressed with it. I said, "Wow, those voices fit real well." And instead of getting mad about it, I loved it. And anyway, they caught them and they had to drop it. But that was after like 1.3 million views, you know. So a lot of people got to see it and didn't have to pay for it. So, but that's okay. That's all right.
That happens.
Yeah, yeah, and it happens to all of them. And I kind of look at it like, you know, it's kind of free publicity, you know.
Yes.
In case I wanted to do another film, somebody else say, hey, I remember that guy. I won't watch that movie again, you know, or I will watch it, whichever they decide. But, yeah.
But no, I agree 100%. I mean, as I've mentioned, I've watched crap tons of movies, some of them excellent, some of them like, where did you guys get that from? And I will continuously always talk about this one movie because this fact always comes up for me. The budget for this movie was $182. And it shows, but you can also see that they enjoyed the crap out of doing the movie. And that's kind of the joy of a B-movie from what I understand, is if you can put something together that's half decent in one way or another, That's the whole point,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I'm really impressed. A lot of people don't like these guys, but I'm just so impressed with the Polonia brothers. I know one of them's passed away now, but those guys turn out movies. I mean, they must, I don't know how many they must have out. It's got to be 50 to 80 movies, and there's no budget on them, but they're addicting. Have you ever seen any of their movies?
I'm just pulling them up because I want to know if I had.
Mark and John Polonia. They did one that's called Feeders, Aliens. They're really bad, but they're fun. They're entertaining, and they're no budget to them at all. But what they accomplish, and they've been at it for 20 years. I think Mark died probably 5 or 10 years ago. But
ooh, I've seen Blood Red Planet. I've seen The House That Screamed. I think I've seen Hellspawn.
They got a couple of great shark movies that I just crack up watching them. And that's what it is. It's entertainment. And if you want to sit there and scowl at these things, don't watch them.
But,
I love them. I even contacted, I think it was Mark, and told him, you know, how I respected what he's done. And I guess he makes a living at it. I am not sure.
John is no longer with us.
John's the one that passed away.
And Mark is still showing alive.
Yeah, cranking them out. I think the last time I...
Oh, Noah's Shark. That's on my list of ones to watch. Oh, Sharkula is also on the list. Emmyville in Space? No, there's no way I'm watching that one. That was... Oh! Okay, so the movie that I always said was $182 budget?
Yeah.
It's one of theirs.
I figured it was. Right? When you said that sounds like a Polonia.
And I've seen Landshark.
Landshark's really good.
That's actually
not
bad for its thing. Oh, and Sharkenstein is also another one. And I've seen Bigfoot versus Zombies. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Yeah, amazing. These guys are incredible, man. They worked together for a long time. So, check out Theaters.
It'll be on the list now. Now that I know the name and I'm connecting it to it, it's like, yep, there's at least 4 or 5 movies on that list that I'm going to have to watch because that's my stuff.
Yeah,
that's
trust you, you'll enjoy it, man. You will if you like stuff like that, and I do. When I say stuff like, I'm not trying to degrade them at all. I'm not. I know what it's like to have to make a movie with no money. It's hard. My first movie, we shot it in 1986. It was called Marley's Revenge, the monster movie, and we literally begged, borrowed, and stole. We had 14-foot monster in it. We had probably 60 or 70 zombies.
Excellent.
It was 2 years of work, and this was before the zombie craze, you know, in 86. This was before, you know, you had Night of the Living Dead.
You mean the second craze.
Well, yeah.
First craze is from Night of the Living Dead.
Right, yeah. But, And plus, we knew we didn't have any money, so we wrote the script in that direction to make it look campy. And the guy who built our monster literally found some big styrofoam blocks out at the river that they use for fishing piers. And he carved us a 14-foot, looks like a dinosaur. And he had that thing where it would manipulate with strings and pulleys. And it was quite amazing. And we didn't have $40,000. Like I said, we shot this on film. And it was literally kite string, tape, and chewing gum holding these things together. I'll try to find you a copy of it. It's only... I noticed that in China, copies sell for $180.
Well,
yeah,
that's internet.
I wouldn't give you $5 for a truckload of them, man. I got real sick of that movie real fast. I had a bulldog producer that was really a bully, and he kept wanting things. Hey, let's put some titties in there, this kind of thing. I said, hey.
This is actually one of the questions I was going to ask about. Because, okay, every horror movie I watch that is on a certain spectrum from here down always has to have some kind of booby shot. Yeah. Like, is that some kind of unwritten rule that you as a director or a writer would see and get to? Or is it like, yeah, I don't know. If it works for the story, cool, but...
Yeah, I don't mind seeing it in other horror movies, but I really don't see the point. To me, that doesn't work. It doesn't fit in the chemistry why would I want to be scared 1 minute and then aroused the next? To me, that's
some people are strange.
But you know, I always don't take this the wrong way, but I always, when I make a movie myself, it's got my name on it, I want to make sure my mother can see it. Yeah, uh-huh. That's all. You know, that's all.
I want to make a movie my mother cannot see.
Yeah, well, you know.
She doesn't watch blood splatter.
She just still didn't like it because the word bullshit was in it. She had a very religious family. But I even now that she's passed away, I still wouldn't do it. I don't like to use the profanity. I use profanity all the time, but I don't want to impress that on children while I'm trying to, you know, entertain them with something like, you saw the kind of what I was doing with Night Feeders. I wanted to keep it kind of campy, a little funny, but still have the scary in it.
Yeah.
And I've noticed that kids really love that movie. I get a lot of, you know, reaction from children in the 9 to 13 year range. They just love to watch that movie at Halloween because their little brothers can watch it, and there's nothing in there that's gonna, you know, some gory and blood, but there's, you don't hear the F word.
And everybody nowadays looks at that as like, oh, that's fake violence or whatever. It's not real, but it's funny looking. It's like, then you get real violence like Hostel and a few other movies like Saw and a bunch of other torture porn movies. And it's like, okay, I could see that in real life, and I could see people doing that stuff. And it's like that one scene with the needle in the eye. Okay, mm-hmm. That made me cringe. And it's like, no, I don't like to see some of that stuff.
But, you know, I got a side of me that likes, I like the Saw movies. And, you know, the, I don't know if you ever saw it, but there's a Fulci movie called Zombie. Have you ever seen Zombie?
I have it on my shelf over there.
There's a scene in there where a zombie fist busts through a door and a splinter goes in that woman's eye. And I'm going to tell you what. As far as horror movie scenes go, that had me crawling all over the couch, man. I could not believe what I was seeing. Loved every frame of it. I thought, wow, that's really good stuff. And everybody else says, boy, that's just cheap, you know. And I thought, no, that's great stuff, man. I like it all.
Have you ever watched any Japanese splatter horror movies?
If I had to read subtitles, probably not.
Well, no, they dub them. They dub them.
They do? You'll have to suggest a few titles for me so I can, you know, because I'd be glad to.
Tokyo Gore Police is probably the biggest known one.
That sounds like a winner.
This is twisted. Tokyo Gore Police.
I'm writing that one down right now.
Another one called Robo Geisha.
Robo Geisha. Okay. Yeah. Have you ever seen a gore film called Dr. Gore?
I've seen bits of it. I don't think I've seen the whole thing.
Well, it's terrible. It's almost unwatchable. But it was made by a guy named Pat Patterson. And one of the cameramen also was the editor, also was in the movie. Was a mentor of mine, and he's done stuff for Spielberg. He kind of helped out with the flower colors and the color purple and stuff like that, and went other. And but he's one of the ones that's the major contributors in that. They've made it for $20,000, and shot it on 35mm, and. It was a huge hit on the video market. I don't know who got that money, but it used to be called the Body Shop, but they shot that here in Charlotte. And if you ever get a chance to see it, since you are into that, I think you'd kind of enjoy the director. Pat Patterson is a magician, and he was using camera angles and magic illusions to dismember these women and stuff. And it's not too shabby. The gore, the movie itself is, you know, pretty bad. It's a Frankenstein movie, badly acted with a woman instead of a monster. And there's a scene in there, Zach, you will not believe. They're in a jail cell talking and mopping the jail cell. And when they change angles, the clapboard is in front of the camera. And you can see the title of the movie and the guy clapping. And he slowly pulls it out of the shot. Kind of like if he moves it slow enough, nobody will see it. You know what I mean? It's in the cut, in the movie. And it'll floor you when you see it. You think, why did they leave that? And to this day, nobody can answer that question because Pat died.
Yeah,
you know,
I just looked up his IMDb.
I actually met him. He used my house in one of his movies when I was about 18 years old.
Cool.
And came by my house, and they just literally pull in your driveway. Hey, man, can we shoot part of our movie here? And they dragging out cameras, and 30 minutes later, they're gone. I mean,
they're
done.
That's guerrilla shooting.
They're guerrilla shooting.
Yeah.
And, He even left a cat there, and he said, "I'll be back to get it," and he never did come back and get that cat. But that movie was called The Electric Chair. They also called it The Goat Woman. But if you ever see it, if it's not the worst movie you have ever seen in your life, it's worth seeing for one scene. When they go into the courtroom scene, when they have the big killing in the courtroom, look and you'll see a chubby fellow there with long hair. Well, that guy is Larry Drake. He was Dr. Giggles.
Oh, yeah. I've seen that one.
And literally, he just kind of just stumped. "Hey, man, you want to be in this movie?" He said, "Sure." And he sat down and he wasn't an actor at the time. He was working at a carnival. And he probably gave him $10 to be in that courtroom. But he's the most famous person in that whole movie by far. And he's only in it maybe 8 seconds. And you don't even say nothing. But nobody, it's hard to recognize him because he looks like a fat hippie instead of
So pre-show, you had mentioned actually that slides right into a thing that Evil Dead 2 was filmed close to where you are as well.
Right.
And I love that movie. I love all of the Evil Dead movies, even the remakes.
I'm a big Sam Raimi fan. Ever since Blood Simple, I've always loved his. Not Blood Simple, that's the Coen brothers, but they kind of associated, and they had that same click going on where instead of steady cams, they'd use boards with the camera mounted in the middle and thing. But they shot that in Wadesboro, about 40 miles from where I'm at right now. It's on a little dirt road. And on one side you got the cabin down in the woods, and on the other side of the dirt road you got the Color Purple house, which is that big two-story white farmhouse, which is really cool because the back side of that house, they fixed it up to look like another house. So you got a driveway of mailboxes on both sides of the house. You know, pretty interesting the way I love movie making. It's just the greatest thing. But that cabin is still down there, but it's pretty much
still.
It's fallen pretty hard. When they did the Blu-ray in 2018 or 2019, I'm not sure exactly when the date was, but I went with the Red Shirt crew down to the location because rattlesnakes had been found down there during the shoot when they shot the movie, actually, in 87 or 86, whenever it was. And so Red Shirt asked me if I wouldn't mind coming down there with my snake tongs and make sure that they don't run into rattlesnakes. So I said, "Shoot, yeah, I'm good." So I got to go down there to the cabin and check it out real close and make sure they were safe to walk around in there with their cameras and stuff.
So you were a rattlesnake whisperer.
Yeah, well, I'm not scared. I'm not scared to catch one. I didn't want to run into one.
Saying, "Oh, yeah, you're a rattlesnake. You go right away right there."
Yeah, I'd probably try to catch it or something, but, I'd rather not run into one. Plus, too, if I would run into one, I'm afraid it would have ran that crew off, and I wanted to see the cabin. They did a great job. In fact, in the Blu-ray, that clip I sent you is the whole thing with Tony down in that cabin, and what's really cool, the cabin had shutters, and I think in the original the camera actually went through the shutters into the house.
I think there's one scene where he does. Yeah,
but in part two it doesn't do that. I think it goes in the front door or something, but anyway, the shutters, the director, Michael, I forgot his name, the short, he says, "You can have these shutters if you want them." And I said, "Sure." And he took them back to his place in Chicago, wherever it was, and had them mounted. And and had an engraved picture of the cabin put on it and stuff and sent it to me, man. And it's a prized possession. I love it. It's a
very cool. I'll give you $5 for it.
Yeah, I've been offered $500 for it, and I think you got to be kidding. I'm looking for a Campbell. If I could run into Bruce Campbell, I want him to sign the back of it for me. I doubt that chance will ever come up. But.
Actually, that would be one of the things he probably would sign, because he still, as I understand, gets royalties from that movie, but not from the other one. So I've heard things where it's like you go to a convention or whatever, and you bring something from the first one, he won't do the first one, but if you bring something from the second one, he'll sign that.
Wow. I have to keep my eye open for... I've had the fortune of getting to work. I actually had a table at one. I got to meet some Canadian folks. One of the Jason and the Michael Myers, both of them were from, I think, Toronto.
That's where we are.
But they were great guys, man. I enjoyed meeting them. I've had a chance to meet some of these people, but not Bruce Campbell. I always wanted to meet Bruce Campbell.
I was close to meeting him, but the lineup was 250 people long, and I'm not waiting 4 hours to do that.
Yeah, I'm sure he's a nice guy. I'm not doing. Plus, I ain't gonna pay a bunch of money to shake his hand neither. I waited in a long line just to shake George Romero's hand, but I think there's a lot of folks that would have done that.
I actually shook his hand with nobody ahead of me.
Wow!
Yeah, I got to meet him at a convention out here, and it was like, okay, I guess he just had a break in the crowd or whatever, and I just walked by, and it's like, oh, George. Hey, how's it going? Love all your movies. Thanks.
Yeah,
and then went back on my stuff.
Huge Romero fan. Yeah.
Yeah, Romero's awesome.
Yeah, when I saw Dawn of the Dead, I knew I wanted to make movies. I said, that's what I want to do right there.
Did you ever make the trip to Evans City Cemetery?
I haven't, but I've seen every video on the internet about it.
I got to go.
Really?
Yeah. There was a convention there in Philadelphia. They've been holding it for like the last 12 years now, 13 years now. And they have a Night of the Living Dead reunion every once in a while. And I got to meet a bunch of the people. We had Dude Face from Dawn. What the hell was it? The helicopter pilot. He was room with the rest of the group. We were all partying.
Wow. Did you go to the Monroe Mall?
I didn't get to go to the Monroe Mall. That was the one thing. We just couldn't get to the time of it. We spent like the one afternoon all over the cemetery. It's like, oh, there's the headstone of the one Barbara gets trapped behind.
People say, yeah, what's your three favorite movies? It's Dawn of the Dead, and Driving Miss Daisy, and The Wizard of Oz. And if that doesn't cover the whole spectrum, nothing does.
Definitely an eclectic mix.
Yeah, but they are. All three of them, they're my favorites. But Dawn of the Dead kind of stands up. I've probably seen it 60 times, at least. Yeah. I'm 66, but I've got the mentality of a 30, 25, or maybe an 18-year-old when it comes to horror movies.
I'm a Toys R Us kid. I'm never growing up.
Have you ever seen Cannibal Holocaust?
Yes, I have.
And there's one there.
That's a messed up movie.
Yeah. That's one that almost turned me away from it, man. I thought, wow, that's pretty brutal, man. And then I'd think about it. I said, that was a hell of an effect. I really bought that. I really thought that was real, Of course, a lot of it was real, the rats and stuff, That's what movies are supposed to do. They're supposed to make you give them a reaction, And that's what that guy, when he made that movie, he even told them actors, I want y'all to act like you don't exist. he wanted people to think that they were actually killed.
Yeah.
And he actually went to, if I ain't mistaken, I think he went to jail for a little bit over. Now, they tried to charge him with it. Of course, the actors showed up and said, no, we're not dead, you know. But I can't remember the guy's name.
Yeah, I heard something about that as well.
Well, you know, plus, too, you never know how much of that's true, you know, because they're trying to sit. But we both heard it, so that must have made it true.
Not only that, I mean, it's that movie got banned for some time for a little while.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that doesn't surprise me a bit. They told me the version I saw was cut, and I said, you got to be kidding. That was cut? Wow, I got to see the original. I don't want you thinking that I don't like to put cuss words in my movies because I'm a goody-goody, because I'm by far a long way from that.
The first movie I watched that was a horror movie has the same sort of stigma attached to it. Children shouldn't play with dead things.
Oh,
for a
I
long
loved
period
it.
Of time. There was people who thought they actually sacrificed a live baby in the movie.
You really? Yeah. Alan Ormsby and Clark. He's the same guy that made a real famous movie. He got killed in a car accident. His name was Clark, and then Alan Ormsby, and I think they made that movie for like $200,000 or something like that. And I loved it. I thought the graveyard scene was second to none. I'd never seen anything like it. But it didn't hold up real well. When you watch it today, you say, wow, that's pretty bad. But I did love it at the drive-in. I was that guy that was at the drive-in every Friday and Saturday night. I'm usually there till sunrise, especially when they had horror movies all night. So.
Yep, gotta watch monster movies. Gotta watch the messed up stuff.
But sometimes you have a lady with you, and you have to tell her to shut up so you can watch the movie.
No,
that movie ain't never been that good.
That's correct.
Especially some of them that you see at the drive-in, some of those, grindhouse stuff.
Grindhouse movies are fun. They can be messed up too.
Yeah, but you know, that's true independent filmmaking, man. There's so many good ones out there. I quit collecting about 15 years ago. I probably got 2,000 or 3,000 movies that I've saved up.
Cool.
Old grindhouse stuff, you know. I was going to be a real smart guy since Betamax. And so I got like 2,000 of them on beta.
Yeah, but the thing is, some of those movies still haven't been transferred to Blu-ray or DVD yet. There are still a number of movies that are still on tape and whatever, and they're not yet available on streaming or on disc.
Recently, I heard about one called, I think it's I Eat Your Skin.
I've seen that.
Isn't that the one with the rabies? The girl that feeds the pies.
So, yeah, if I remember correctly. It's been a long time since I've watched it, but I do remember seeing that.
Well, I read a year or so ago that they was going to do a Blu-ray re-release of that, all fixed up, and I have been chomping at the bits to see that, and I hadn't heard another word about it. That was a real low-budget one, but it was great for drive-in stuff, man. It's, yeah. You know, just great. I told all my filmmaking buddies, I said, man, we just missed it by 20 years. If we could have been 20 years earlier, we could have got in on this drive-in thing. You know,
oh, absolutely, yeah.
But now everybody's got a camera and an idea. So there's movies everywhere now.
Yeah, I've been seeing a couple of these movies now, and it's like, dude, you filmed this on an iPhone, didn't you? Who can tell? Stuff. And it looks good. Like, it really does look good, but that's totally iPhone because it's too slick.
When we just got distribution on night theaters, we were told that that month that ours was released, that there were 600 movies released that month.
Mm-hmm.
600.
Yep.
That's a lot of movies.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me in the least. When you go into IMDb and you search on just horror movies over the years, you'll find that progressively there have been more and more being released every year. The average is somewhere between 1,200 and 1,500 a year, just horror movies, not including sci-fi and fantasy as well.
Wow.
That's a lot of movies.
That's a lot of movies.
And it's a lot of movies that start with a very low budget to cost to make, but reap huge money in the returns on it, because the video rental market or the streaming rental market, even though it's a dollar or two for rental or whatever, 600,000 people watch it. That's a lot of bank.
Yeah. Yeah. It sounds good on paper. Yeah.
In reality, horror movies have the greatest per capita highest return in general.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Not on individual movies, but as a a group.
Oh, yeah, you are absolutely right. It always has been that way since the late 40s. You know, it's just they're cheaper to make, and I don't know. I love horror movies, you know, even bad ones, man. The Milton Man, stuff like that. I just love them. That one called Squirm.
Yes.
Man, Lieberman's one of my favorites, man. Did you know Martin Sheen was supposed to have been the star of that?
Okay, this month I've been watching a lot of older horror movies that I haven't seen in 20, 30 years and whatever. It's like the Halloween, a bunch of the other movies and stuff. And then you recognize people and it's like, holy crap, that's Kevin Bacon. I did not remember he was in this movie.
Yeah, man, he was in one of the Friday the 13th, I think.
Friday the 13th is the next set of movies for you to watch.
Yeah, well, I don't know if I mentioned to you, I worked in commercial, well, I did. And I worked in commercials and I worked on hundreds of them. But anyway, I worked a lot with a lot of other technicians that love movies. So we got together one weekend, and I asked another friend, I says, if you can help us raise money, I've been made a challenge to make a movie for $5,000. You know, and I said I could do it. And so I got with all my commercial making buddies with the good equipment and stuff. And I spent 6 months writing a script about an internet troll trying to torment this preacher's wife. And we shot that thing. We built a set and shot it in 5 days for $3,500. And we actually won awards with it. Couldn't sell it for shit because we didn't have a star in it. But
kind of always a thing, right? With a lot of those movies. Yeah.
I do want to send you a copy of it because I think you would enjoy it. It was a challenge for us, and I think you, from what I'm gathering from you, is you appreciate film work and.
I appreciate the joy that people making them put into them. Now, you can make a shitty horror movie and have all the money in the world, and I'm not going to like it as much. You can make a $300 movie and it has fun, I'm going to enjoy it. One of my favorite horror movies is Thanksgiving. Have you ever seen it?
Yes.
$4,000 budget. $1,000 was just to have that thing with the boobs in the first 60 seconds. And it's like, this had absolutely nothing to do with the movie, but that was marketing and it was brilliant. But I watched it anyways.
I dug and dug and dug until I found that movie, man. I had to see it.
I have it on DVD. distributor for the comic books. They brought it in and it's like, yes, I'm buying that.
What's that guy's name that produces those movies? He's real popular. I can't think of his name, of course.
There's probably a crap ton of guys, but let me see if I can find this one.
Yeah, he's
the one you're talking about.
It seems like if I'm not mistaken, it seemed like he got a bunch of amateurs together to make that film. And
well, that one was the two guys who did it, Jordan Downey and Brad Schultz. They were doing that as part of their educational thing. I think they used it as their university submissions thing to get into a professional program for making movies and stuff.
Well, maybe I've got the wrong movie. Is this the one about the killer turkey?
Yep. That's okay. Puppet?
Yeah. I loved it.
That movie was hilarious. And then they did Thanksgiving 3, the sequel. I was like, what happened to Thanksgiving 2? Well, that's the whole premise of Thanksgiving 3, is trying to find the second movie that didn't get done. And it's like, it's going to destroy the world if it ever gets done.
Brilliant.
The producers on this were the two guys that did the movie, Jordan Downey and Kevin Stewart.
I watched one the other day, man. It was on Riff Track, so it was called Birdemic. And holy smoke, have you ever seen that?
That one, no.
Birdemic. Do yourself a favor.
Wait. Birdemic. It has come up for me to watch at some time, but I think I passed. Birdemic Shock and Terror?
Yeah, that's the one.
Birdemic 3 Sequel, Birdemic 2 The Resurrection, Experience Tour, and the Riff Track version.
Yeah, the Riff Track. If you're going to watch it at all, watch the Riff Track, because they'll help you appreciate and get you through it.
I think you're thinking James Nguyen.
Yes.
That was the guy who produced that one. Yeah. Oh, and directed and wrote it as well.
Yeah. It went to his head big time, from what I understand.
Look at that IMDb rating.
Yeah, what is it, -2?
It's 1.7. Did you know that Night Feeders has a 4.6?
No,
which
I didn't.
Which is a good average.
That's not too bad.
Yeah, that's not too bad. I went and looked at it. I was like, I thought it was going to be lower than that, but that's actually not bad. That's a fairly good rating. Well, for B-movies.
Yeah, I wouldn't have expected it to be that high. But I would hope nobody would, rake it over the coals, because it's not a bad movie.
It's not a bad movie. It was fun. It's kind of got a good redneck hillbilly type feel to it, as long as some good old boys from the city just trying to get in the country.
Yeah. Big Donnie, he's still around.
That's good.
He's what you see is what you get. You know what that guy did for a living when we made that movie?
Picked up roadkill?
He was a pork rind salesman.
Okay.
Yeah. He sold chicken feet and pork rinds and sausages and pickled eggs. That's what he did.
I don't know how anybody can eat chicken feet.
He made a good living off of it. I know, man. They're disgusting, man. But you know what? They do sell a lot of them.
Sorry. I've got the trailer of Birdemic on.
It's terrible, man. The infamous coat hanger scene when they're trying to kill the birds with coat hangers. It's just unwatchable. But
that's bad. Yeah, I may have to watch this.
Yeah. It's fun. But Riff Tracks will help you get through it, because it's hard.
I don't need that. I can watch bad movies anytime, because I can see how they're doing the birds. They're just overlaid.
Oh, wait. they actually explode later.
I saw the explosion too.
Yeah. That's like airplanes crashing and they blow. It's just ridiculous.
Oh, my God. That is so ridiculous. I may have to watch that.
Very, very entertaining.
Let's see. 2010, so not too old. But, yeah, I should be able to find that.
I love the way he put that lady was in Psycho. What's her name? The lady was in the shower. If you look in the credits, he has her as one of the stars of the movie.
Tippi Hedren?
Tippi Hedren, yeah. He's got her as a star.
I see that archival footage.
Yeah, it is. There's a TV on in the background. It's playing that shower scene. And so that's his way of
getting a big name in the movie.
Yeah.
That's cheesy.
Yeah, it didn't work.
One of the coolest ones of that is Whale Wolf versus Sharktopus with what's his name? What is his name? Eric? Oh, now I gotta look it up.
Estrada?
No, not Estrada. He's been in so many bad movies. and he's famous. What the hell was his name? It's like, oh, damn it.
No, please don't tell me. Please tell me it's not Bognosian.
No.
Okay.
No. Not that one. Oh, man. I was sure it was in Eric. Okay. I can't remember the guy's name, but he's been in some of the others of these goofy, weird combo kind of crazy monster movies. But he has a cameo appearance in the movie. He's in a framed picture in the one lady's office. He was the scientist in the previous movies. He was in DOA. He was in DOA. Yes, Eric Roberts.
That was it. Oh, yeah. Yeah, because usually if you'll see him in a movie, it's always a one-set piece. Because they'll pay him like $50,000 to come out there for a day and shoot all of his stuff. I like him too. Have you ever seen the one about that he made? No, he wasn't. That wasn't him. I was thinking of Michael Pare. He's kind of along those same lines.
Oh, Michael Pare. Yeah. He's doing some stuff right now.
It's fun to watch. I was watching that one where the plane had to land on a little island in the middle of a hurricane. And it has like...
doable.
Oh, yeah. Without a pilot.
Yeah, on autopilot. The autopilot puts the wheels down at the right time, puts the flaps up, just coast right on it.
But they had that one tent scene of Michael Pare. You could tell that they paid him for like a day just to come in there and drink a cup of coffee. But entertaining, you talk about the pilot, they just forget about him. He got wounded, and they just left him on the plane, and the movie ends. And it's like, what about the pilot?
They did. Who cared?
The writer didn't care.
And nobody else did either, right?
No, they didn't care because they had a gunfight up at 60,000 feet or 30,000 feet. It's machine guns and stuff, you know. And I imagine that'd play hell on a pressurized cabin.
Yeah.
But entertaining, you know.
Well, snakes on a muffin fluffin plane?
Yeah.
Because that was not going to be something that they would be very happy about.
You know, when I went and seen that movie, I was shaking my head when I went in. I said, why am I doing this? Does anybody see me going in here?
But, I have a thing. If the movie just completely pushes me right out of the suspension of disbelief, I no longer like this, and I'm picking apart every single thing about it. If the movie can say, yeah, that's probably not believable, but it's fun, I can get past that.
Yeah.
Like, there's a movie called Battleship.
Battleship, yes.
Yeah. Well, it's based a modern on the movie. Game. Came out about 10 years, 5 years ago. I hate this movie.
I heard somebody else say that's based on the game, isn't it?
That's based on the game. And that alone was kind of a... I don't know where you guys are going with this and why you're doing that, but okay, we'll see what you do. They have the Battleship, which is a decommissioned World War II cruiser with at least a number of things that are like, no, there's no way. You drop anchor on a boat that's going 40, 60, 80 knots, whatever the hell it was that was going, and you expect to do a Tokyo slide? It's like, drop, slide. No. It's going down. It's going to snap in half, or the anchor is going to fracture and break apart and cause the boat to whiplash. There is no way you're doing a Tokyo drift with a World War II battleship. It incensed me so much, and I absolutely will tell everyone this movie sucks. And the best line delivered in the movie is delivered by Rihanna. And I don't have anything against her, because I like her in some stuff. I liked her in, what the hell was the one? Some other stuff. But that's pretty when she's the one that delivers, "You damn sunk my battleship," it's like, oh my god.
Oh no.
This is horrible.
That's a pretty big budget movie too, wasn't it?
Yeah. It had a good $50 million budget or $30 million budget or something.
Think of all the filmmakers that could have divided that up and all of them made a decent movie.
Yeah. I mean, a World War II battleship decommissioned, sitting in port as a tourist site, does not have working cannons. You can't have a crew of 80-year-olds fighting a battleship. I was just there was just every single thing. Right off the bat when the aliens dropped their little super smart bomb, everything after that was a cascade of no. I was just... Serenity now.
Now I gotta see it, Zach. Oh, gotta see it.
You gotta see how bad it is.
Yeah, I gotta know. People said that about Battlefield Earth.
Yes, that's another example of exactly what I'm talking about. A $22 million budget, $20 million went to John Travolta's salary.
Yeah, that was pretty bad.
That was the one.
It was bad. It was, I thought, wow, they really hit it on that one. But, you know, I heard somebody say the same thing about Eli. I thought that was a great movie.
Eli, the one in the future, dry planets, no power, the one guy walking around with the Walkman?
He's a blind guy.
That was
an
okay movie. Yeah. I had some issues with it, but for the most part it was okay.
I thought it was pretty good. I liked the style of it, and I'm a Denzel Washington fan.
I liked the twist. The twist was awesome.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
But there
was
no way that iPod was going to be working that long.
No, there's a couple of things, too. If you did the Bible in Braille, it would take up probably about 12 to 20 volumes because Braille actually jacks up the thickness of the page.
Well, the amount of Braille words, just to be able to say the same amount of words in spoken or written, is like, what, 3 times the width?
Yeah, it'd be, he couldn't carry it around in that backpack, that's for sure.
It was probably just a New Testament.
Yeah, the New Testament. Broke down version.
Yeah. Made it simple. Portable, as it were. So have you watched any movies recently that you can compare to that you would think, hey, this was really cool, or this was like, what the hell? Like modern movies.
You know, I haven't. Not anything that made me go, wow, or anything like that. I've been actually kind of disappointed. I think, wow, you know, it's like, well, maybe I'm getting older and I don't appreciate the new styles and stuff. I hope that's not the case. But
it probably is, because I've been noticing something similar in myself.
I don't like the video game approach. I don't like the quick choppy cuts and stuff like that. And I kind of long for that pause, give you time to build and this atmosphere and stuff. And it seems like you're too quick to try to get to the violence. And
it's jump, 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 skill. Jump, 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 kill.
Yeah, if you kind of understand what I'm trying to say there, you know, there's something about if you go to kill somebody, you know, build some suspense over it. You know, death is something that's really permanent.
Build a world, build the characters, then kill them all off.
Yeah, give them somebody, you know, either
you gotta care about them.
Yeah, or not care about them.
Or hate them enough to just hope that they do get killed.
That was something I really worried about with Night Feeders. I wanted to make sure these characters were likable,
That was a thing I did read from somebody. It's like somebody was saying on one of the reviews that's like, oh man, they killed that guy and he should have been the one because he was the most hero-like. It's like, obviously you cared enough to complain about it.
Yeah.
Well, but I got a movie suggestion for you if you haven't seen it in this good, modern, well-done format.
Okay.
The Autopsy of Jane Doe.
Oh, that sounds good.
It's a very low-key movie. Did not have a huge, huge budget, but what they had, they used beautifully. And it's a good creepy ghost story, witch story type thing.
I like stories like that. I mean, have you ever seen that movie called Ghost? It was called Ghost Story. It had the three old actors in it. The big famous old time actors. Real nice, creepy, atmospheric. I mean, I just love that. And I said, wow, you don't really see that in movies anymore.
I have a question from the chat room for you.
Okay.
Have you ever watched or do you like the movies Trancers and Zone Trooper?
I like Trancers.
Trancers is awesome. Jack Death, awesome character.
Anybody that don't like Jack Death, there's something wrong with him.
Well, not exactly the slickest movie in the world, but it's fun.
No, sometimes slick, like you said a while ago, sometimes that slickness takes something away from it. One of the movies I really, really like is, a lot of people don't like, it's got the Puppet Master. Have you ever seen
Love Puppet Master.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, those are great, man. That's
it's like, how can you make 12 movies? Like this?
Yeah, like this. I've actually gone to his road show. I can't remember his name, the director of those movies.
Charles Band?
That's him.
Yeah.
He actually goes on the road and does a show, and has beheadings and stuff like that on. And it's really, and they sell those dolls and stuff from the movies, and they are not cheap. They are
not
cheap. It's a weird show to go see. If you ever get a chance to see one of them, go see it. You'll never see another one like it again.
Never comes up here, so unless I go into this U.S. sometime, it's not going to happen. But he's got his own streaming service.
I'm surprised he didn't get locked up. I really am. I'm surprised he didn't end up in jail. You got to remember, Charlotte is one of the buckles of the Bible Belt. And this guy came through here with full frontal nudity up on the stage, man. I mean, nobody was expecting any of that. And he just had women come. Of course, they were paid, you know. But it sure was entertaining.
I'm sure we've seen worse nowadays than that, because I've seen and heard about some shows is like, what? Okay.
Well, it was funny because it thinned out the crowd. It did. It probably 200-300 people got up. Well, not that many, maybe 50 or 60 probably got up and walked out. And I thought, something good's fixing to happen. I kept waiting, but nothing did. You know, just the main thing was the auction to sell those dolls and stuff. But it was entertaining. It was entertaining.
And cool. Ultimately, what's the point except to be entertained?
That's it. Yeah.
Are you not entertained?
Yeah. Exactly. I love stuff like that, you know. But some people, it's not everybody's taste. My wife is nothing like that. She's complete opposite end of the spectrum.
That kind of fits well.
Yeah, she likes my Never Feed the Troll movie. She really likes that one because that's kind of like a chick flick horror movie. She liked that one. But the rest of my stuff, no, she wants nothing to do with it. No.
No. So previously on discussions we had outside of this, you had mentioned that for Night Feeders, you were going to have a re-release or a Blu-ray release on this?
Yes, yeah.
How are you doing that through?
Well, actually, Tony Elwood is we're going to be distributing it. We now have the rights back. After 15 years, we got the rights back to the film.
Cool.
And so what we wanted to do was go back in and replace all the CGI, because you got to remember, we shot that in 2003, and the technology back then was terrible. And we shot it with mini DV, which does not have perfect blacks. You got to have perfect blacks in order to do your composites. And well, now they have programs available where we can deal and give it the perfect blacks. So we're going to take out all the CGI, the aliens, and replace it with new aliens and better technologies. And we've already got a good start on that already. So
cool. You're going to do it as a Kickstarter?
No, not really, because you mean to raise up money to do it
To raise up money to pay for the new costs and whatever, and then it's a good distribution method.
I've been learning more
about it from other people that I've had on the show, and it's like, this seems to be the way the world is moving for distribution of new stuff like that.
Well, fortunately, Tony works in advertising and stuff.
You have a cat.
See, I do. You are correct. Tony, and we have access to a lot of those programs and stuff that would normally cost, and you know, so we're absorbing the cost as we go along.
Cool.
And we're not having anybody rushing us. We don't have a distributor pushing us because we want to do it right, and when we go to release it, man, we hope that everybody that bought a copy back then will buy a copy now, you know. Instead, this time, it'll be our money instead of the distributors.
Right, so you're private labeling it.
Right.
Nice.
Right. We got more outreach net than we did 20 years ago now.
I mean, when you're starting it out, it's like, okay, you guys are going to sell the movie for us. Oh, okay. Now you can be like, well, we've met thousands and thousands of people. We can sell the movie ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, we've had a lot of people, you know, say, hey, when are you going to finish it? And I thought, finish it? He said, yeah, we got to find out what happens to Donnie and all those guys hunting for them aliens.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The rednecks loaded up on the tractor trailer in the back and driving up. Yeah. Just like, let's get the aliens.
Yeah,
I love that scene.
I thought it would be, well, you know, I did a hint to it earlier in the film when Donnie says, well, you let me get my redneck buddies and we'll show them, you know, and the guy interrupts him. And so I let that go to the end of the movie. So I threw a tease up about that. And a lot of people didn't catch it, but a lot of people did.
I thought it was hilarious.
Yeah. I didn't know how else to end it. I didn't want to kill off all the aliens and stuff. I thought it'd be just kind of nice to have a shift, you know, just so it shifts, and we'll find out the next time.
You gotta leave at least one alien alive so you can have a sequel.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they came back.
I've actually written it. I was asked if I would be interested in writing it as a series, and so I've wrote it's about 400 pages now, so it's, I got enough, but I've stopped. Because I've made my point with the 400 pages of what, you know, to show that it could go as a series if it wanted to. But, you know, to me, it was a waste of time. You know, so.
Gotcha. A dead end.
Yeah, yeah. I've written 24 scripts. And I know Tony's probably wrote as many. And it's funny, you write them and you try to do something with them, and next thing you know, you're putting it in a folder and sticking it on the shelf, and then you're writing another one to lay on top of it, you know. And that's what I got now, it's a big stack of scripts. I've able to sell four of them. I sold one to me. You know, so,
well, that's the life of a writer, right?
Yeah.
Which anybody I speak to is a writer or whatever, myself included, we always have a big stack of could have been, would have been, should have been, and some of it that maybe slides in and gets somewhere anyways.
I was really surprised that there was one I thought it would be a surefire thing. It was called The Harps. I don't know. Are you familiar with The Harps?
I'm familiar with harps in general.
No. Macaja and Wiley.
Nope, not familiar with them.
America's first serial killers.
Ah.
They lived in they did their killing over a 3-year period. They were hiking from the Kings Mountain area of North Carolina to Ohio. And in their trip, they killed and gutted over 200 people.
Fun.
This is true. It's a true story. You can look them up. They're called the Harpes, H-A-R-P-E-S. And they were terrifying. I mean, and I wrote
a script. Most serial killers are.
Yeah, these guys went above and beyond. They actually chased down posses that were hunting for them, and they'd kill the posses. These were two badass dudes, man. They had.
There is a movie based on them.
Yep.
Yeah. 15 minutes.
15 minutes?
Yeah, 15-minute short documentary.
Wow, how could they get all that in 15 minutes, man? Those guys were something else, man. If you ever get a chance, read the story about them. It'll give you nightmares, man. These guys were, they had a lieutenant was the head of this posse and was after them. And instead of running away, they waited until the lieutenant was gone. They went to his house, drug his kid out and his slave, gutted him, filled them full of rocks and threw them in the river, left a note, says, and told them who did it. He said, come get me.
That's a fun bunch of guys.
Yeah, of course, the posse was too scared to mess with them, man. They were badasses, yeah.
Well, that would actually be a good time in the world, Hollywood style, to release stuff like that, because there are so many serial killer shows, movies, and whatever. I mean, the Dahmer series is doing gangbusters on Netflix or whatever.
Yeah, I thought it was perfect because I wrote the script and it's a good horror movie piece of history, and I did not lie. I used actual historic facts. In fact, I found one of the Harps' relatives named Don Harp, and he had information, and I fished out of him, and compiled my story, and he did one similar, but his was about the marriage, which I thought, who wants to care about that? I want to hear about the gutting.
Yeah, people are into weird shit.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, well, that's about a wrap right there. Did you want to throw out to anybody how to find you and follow and get involved or whatever not?
Well, I really don't have, I kind of hide, I'm just here. They'll find me on Facebook, friend me on Facebook. I'll be happy to friend with anybody. Other than that, there's really not much of a way to contact me.
I connected with you, because you commented on something I said. It's like, hey, have you ever seen this? Like, no, but I will. Oh, crap, that was actually fun.
And by the way, thank you so much, man. I appreciate you, man. That was very kind of you. You were a good person doing that.
I believe very strongly in supporting whatever is around me. I mean, I love horror movies and all sorts of stuff. I have all sorts of friends who are involved in different things. And if I can always help, I always do.
Well, I've certainly enjoyed talking to you. You really brought up some good stuff, man. If I can ever help you with anything, man, please give me a shout. I'm always here for you.
If I give you $5, can I have the shutters from the Evil Dead Cabin?
Except that.
Well, okay. Bye. So I'll just wrap this up with the, hey, you know where to find me on the Instagram, on the Twitter, and on the Facebook. Find us always every Wednesday night here on tmvcafe.com/radio, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, or whatever the heck time it is that you're working with. Have yourselves an amazing one. Be well, be fun, be, as the Bill and Ted say, excellent to each other. And then I go and find that button, which I had the wrong button ready to queue up, so now I'll get the right button to queue up.